At Ritual, Mother's Day is kind of a big deal, and we're celebrating accordingly. Find your ritual. If mom needs a bit of stress relief, digestive support, or is looking to support glowy, smooth skin, do it today with 40% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/podcast. That's ritual.com/podcast for 40% off your first month. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Hey guys, it's Allie. Welcome back to Infertile AF, the podcast. This is episode 325, called Libby Wicks. This episode is brought to you by Belly. Are you thinking about growing your family? Whether you're just starting to plan or are actively trying to conceive, preconception health is key. That's where Belly comes in. Belly has vitamins to help both women and men optimize their health before pregnancy. With essential nutrients like folate, iodine, and zinc, Belly ensures your body is ready for this exciting next step. Belly goes beyond basic vitamins. Their unique formula supports reproductive health, hormone balance, and fertility, all while being made with the highest quality ingredients. Plus, Belly is created with only clean ingredients so that you can rest assured that you are making a safe choice for you and your future little one. When it comes to starting your family, take the first step with Belly. Give yourself and your future baby the best foundation for a healthy start. Visit bellybaby.com today and use code IAF15 for 15% off your first order. That's bellybaby.com, BELIBABY, for a healthier tomorrow. Belly Baby, because healthy beginnings start here. Thanks, Belly. I want to invite everybody, before we start, to join Fertility Rally and check out a place where you can feel supported no matter what you're going through. We have 4 to 5 support groups per week at various times with various hosts. I always host the one with Blair on Wednesday nights. And we also have IRL events, virtual events, lots of resources, and of course, our annual Fertility Rally Live number 10 is coming up this fall. So check out Fertility Rally on Instagram, DM me, or reach out if you want to check out a group before you commit to anything. Happy to have you check out a group and see if it's your jam. And just know that no matter what you're going through, you do not have to go through it alone. So again, DM me on Fertility Rally or Infertile AF Stories, and we would love to have you. You can also check out our website, which is fertilityrally.com. All right, guys. So my second work of art book is about to go to the printer, and then I'm going to make an announcement and show the cover and all that stuff. But before that happens, the first work of art book, the OG, is available on my website. It's the story of an IVF kiddo, my son, finding out that he was made in a lab. And it's very cute, and I just want to normalize the conversation for families that were created through ART and other families as well. So if you'd like a copy, go to infertileafgroup.com and you can check it out there. Again, it's infertileafgroup.com. All right, guys, I have an incredible woman on the show today. Her name is Libby Wicks, and I'm so happy I met her through our mutual friend, Kennedy. So Kennedy, hi, shout out to you. Thank you so much for putting us in touch. Libby is going to tell us her whole family building story, which spans 5+ years, includes ectopic pregnancy, IVF, anxiety and depression, and a surrogacy journey. So she's going to talk about linking up with New Gen Families, which is this incredible agency that's known for safe, supportive, and ethical surrogacy. And she's going to talk all about that and the incredible relationship that she has with her surrogate and her surrogate's husband, and it's just a beautiful story. So without further ado, this is Libby's infertility story. Hello, Libby. How are you?
Hello, Allie. I'm well, thank you. How are you?
I'm great. It's so good to talk to you. Thank you so much for doing this. You're in Australia, so it's the future there. It's the next day, the next morning. Thank you for getting up so early.
Oh, of course. I'm so excited. I've been a longtime listener of the podcast. And I felt like it was finally my time to contribute.
I'm so glad. So let's start. You can probably guess what I'm going to ask you, but did you always want to have kids?
So I was one of those people, I kind of always thought it was in the plan, but I never knew exactly how and when. But then when I met my husband, that's when it sort of all came together and I knew that I wanted to have a family with him.
Mm-hmm. What was it about your husband that prompted that?
He's just the most kind, sensitive, beautiful, thoughtful man. I just knew he would make an amazing father because he's such a supportive partner to me. And, you know, I saw the way he was with my nieces and nephews, and he was just incredible with them.
Oh, so how long after you guys got together did you start talking about a future and family and what that would all look like?
So I met him, I was in my mid-20s in New York, and we both met in New York City. And so when we first met, we were just running around, having fun. We were young. You know, we weren't talking so much about the future, but then the years progressed and we started to talk about those things. And, you know, we decided, okay, I think we're ready to take the next step. And that was in 2019.
Okay. Before we talk about that and when you guys started to try, I'd love to hear, what was your growing up like? What was sex education like for you? What did you learn in school? What did you know about your body, fertility? I feel like there's such a disconnect there for so many of us, you know, not really knowing anything about how our body worked or about fertility at all. I was just saying to somebody else, I don't think I heard the term infertility until I was in it.
Yeah, no, I had no idea. The fact that it could be this silent issue was a real shock to me.
Okay, so tell me what was happening with you. Once you and your husband did start to try, what happened? What did it look like for you?
Yeah, so we became, you know, we started the conversation, and then, so that was at the end of 2019. The beginning of 2020 was obviously when COVID kicked off. And so that was a very hectic time. We were living in the US at the time and my visa was running out. And so we needed to leave the country very quickly.
Oh my God, that must have been stressful.
Yeah, we packed up our life in 2 weeks. We were living in LA at the time and we jumped on an Australian government flight back to Australia, back to Brisbane. And in the middle of all the madness, and we were put in hotel quarantine when we arrived in Australia. So we were taken by the military and the police straight from the airport to the hotel.
Oh my God. Wait, how did you get on a government plane? How did that happen?
So the Australian government sent Qantas flights to pick up Australian citizens from the world.
Okay.
So we were on one of the government flights. You know, everyone was in hazmat suits. It was
dystopian
situation. Totally. Yeah, it was very bizarre. And so we land in Brisbane, we're taken to the hotel, and that's really where my story starts. So we were in the hotel and I was having what I thought was a very heavy period. And because I'd been on the pill for so many years and we had started trying, I was off the pill. So I just thought to myself, this is just my body trying to reset itself after the pill. It's just a very heavy period. I remember having these heavy, heavy periods when I was young. That's just what this is. And my husband was the one who said, this doesn't seem right. Like, you're not well. And I was like, no, I'm completely fine. I'll just take some more painkillers. I'll have a bath. I'll have a shower. It's okay. Like, I know how to deal with this. And he insisted. He said, something is not right. You look pale. You're dizzy. You keep, like, you're lying on the bed. Like, you're quite lethargic. And I was like, no, I'm fine. I don't want to make a big deal over a period. And he just kept insisting. And so I ended up speaking to, because we weren't allowed out of the hotel room, remember, we're in strict quarantine.
Yeah.
And so I ended up speaking to, they had like a health service that you could call on a phone. Mm-hmm. And I explained what was happening. And the nurse said, look, you should probably just go to the hospital just in case. And I was like, oh, this is silly. Like, I'm going to the hospital over a period. Like, this is the most embarrassing thing ever.
Right.
And, you know, my husband insisted. And so the ambulance came, picked me up, took me to the hospital because I had to travel via ambulance to be allowed, you know, into
the
hospital.
Because of all the quarantine rules and everything.
Exactly. But at that time, there was no COVID in Brisbane, Australia. So as I had come from the US, they put me in the COVID ward because they were terrified. Oh, she's come from the US. Like, you know, because Australia was trying to very strictly control the whole situation because there wasn't really COVID in Australia at that point, like it was in the US. So they put me in a COVID ward and they started running a series of tests on me. And that's when they told me that I was pregnant. And yeah, I had no idea. I was shocked. I was like, really? And they said, yeah, you that bleeding is actually a ruptured fallopian tube and it's an ectopic pregnancy.
Oh my God, Libby. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. And so I was in a state of shock. Meanwhile, my husband's still back in hotel, you know, in quarantine. They wouldn't let him out. And so he managed to get an exemption to come and see me for 10 minutes in the hospital. And then they took me in for emergency surgery because, you know, it was very, very serious. I had been bleeding for days and days at that point. It had become very dangerous. They said this tube needs to be removed immediately. I had the emergency surgery. They still thought that, you know, they were treating me as COVID positive at that time. And so it was just a very, very tense situation.
Yeah.
I was very confused and dazed.
I'm sure.
What was happening.
Were you in pain?
Yes, I was. Yes. So I'm actually shocked that I went for as long as I did before seeking medical attention.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was brushing it off as, oh, this is just period pain. I can handle this.
So many women do that, right? And, you know, it's a good thing to say to people that might be listening, like, if you're having a really, really heavy period or it hurts or it's really, really painful, like, that's not okay. That's not the norm. Thank God that you went. I mean, I'm so glad that, you know, you guys pushed for it. But I understand the hesitance because it's COVID and it's a pain in the ass to get there and it's a whole big thing. And what if it was nothing? And, you know, that's what we do as women is like kind of try to just like bear it out sometimes. So I'm so glad you went.
Yeah. Well, I think the biggest thing that I want women to know is, and it was actually one of the nurses at the hospital. She's the one who discovered the ectopic first because she said to me, do you have any pain, shoulder tip pain? And I said, you mean like on the top of my shoulder? She's like, no, shoulder tip pain. It's a little bit further down. It's sort of like your upper back. And I said, yeah, I do have a bit of pain there. And she said, well, that's actually one of the signs of an ectopic pregnancy because the nerves are connected. And so you will feel pain sort of in that upper back area.
I've never heard that before. My God, thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. And so if you're bleeding and you have that pain in the upper back, yeah, please know that it could be an ectopic pregnancy and definitely to seek medical attention.
Right. So what happened with the surgery and after the surgery?
So I had the surgery and I remember speaking to the doctor and this is how little I understood about my own fertility. I said, okay, so you've removed a fallopian tube. How many of those do I have again?
Yeah.
She's like, you have two.
Yeah.
And I've taken one. And I was like, okay. Two tubes, you've taken one. What does that mean? Can I get pregnant? And she's like, yes, absolutely. You can still be pregnant. You know, the one remaining tube can pick up eggs from both ovaries. And so, you know, you still absolutely can have a baby. And
I was like,
thank God.
Oh my God. I would have been in the same boat. Totally valid question. Cause like we were saying, like I don't know so much about my own body. And I'm sure so many other people listening too.
Had no idea. I'm Googling furiously, like, how many tubes do you have? How do you get pregnant?
Like, yeah, you're in like a Reddit hole.
Yeah. From my hospital bed, I'm Googling.
Like, exactly.
So I think once that happened, the doctor said to me, look, that was just bad luck. And there's no reason why you can't fall pregnant again. You know, you still have a tube. And so no further investigation was done. It was just put down to bad luck.
Okay.
She said, yep, just try again. Mm-hmm. And so we did. And I got pregnant again very quickly, except this time I was on alert. I was on high alert for everything. I knew, you know, what was going on. I insisted on the earliest ultrasound. I think I went to the hospital at like 3 weeks and I demanded that they give me an ultrasound.
Good for you.
And they said, it's too early to tell at 3 weeks. And I was like, well, what about 4 weeks? And they're like, still might be a little early. And so I kept going back until, I think it was about 6 weeks into the pregnancy. And went for the ultrasound. This time my husband was with me and that's when they said, I'm sorry, this pregnancy is not viable and you're having a second ectopic pregnancy.
A second ectopic? Oh my God.
And so this time around, it was a lot less of a shock because I was already, I guess I was expecting it again, almost, obviously hoping for a different outcome. But right. It wasn't as big of a shock. And because I got ahead of it, you know, I was ahead of it before the tube had ruptured. So we knew that that it was not viable. And so I was treated with methotrexate, which is actually a chemotherapy drug. And so I would go to the hospital, have that drug, and then that would end the pregnancy. And so each week I would go back to the hospital, they'd draw blood, and just to watch my HCG going down to zero. So that was, that was a difficult experience, because each week I'd be going to the hospital, to the center where all the pregnant women were, you know, having their ultrasounds, and I'd be making sure that my pregnancy was ending as theirs were progressing.
It's such a unique form of torture, right? That you don't even really think about until you're in this world. It's like waiting to become unpregnant again, you know? Yes. And like you said, surrounded by so many pregnant people, that's just traumatic.
Yeah, it was very difficult. But I think after that second ectopic, I knew something's wrong. I'm like, this isn't right now. Like, this is two ectopic pregnancies.
Yeah.
Something must be wrong with my tubes or something else. And so at that point, I went straight to an IVF doctor and I said, you know, this is what's been happening to me. And she, you know, ran a bunch of tests. And then I ended up having a hysteroscopy. And that's where I was first diagnosed with Asherman syndrome. They said, you know, your uterus is full of adhesions that need to be cleared. And that's what we think is causing the ectopic pregnancies. Mm. And so I was sort of given that diagnosis. That was a huge shock.
Right. Did they give you any indication how the Ashermans came about or what that would look like in terms of trying to carry again, if you could, et cetera?
So throughout this whole process, I was doing all of my own research. As any woman who's been through this process knows, no one is really holding your hand through any of this. You're on your own. You are furiously researching. You're Googling at 3 a.m. in tears. You are digging through Facebook groups. You know, once you get that diagnosis, you're joining every Facebook group about that diagnosis. 100%. You're DMing women, you're Googling, you're reading research papers. And so I read everything there was to read about Asherman syndrome. Mm-hmm. I went deep on it. And, you know, they told me you have severe Asherman syndrome. And so that's when I started, when I was researching the outcomes of that, that is really when I started to feel like this has taken a turn now. This is a serious issue, and it may be one that I may not overcome. So I think that was the first time I started to understand that. But of course, you know, I ended up through the networks of women, I ended up getting in touch with a doctor who specializes in Asherman syndrome in Sydney. He's one of actually the world's leading experts in this condition. Mm-hmm. And so that's when a bit of hope came back into my veins, because I thought, okay, I'm with the right person. And he said, look, we're going to perform these surgeries on you to clear the adhesions. I've had, you know, high success rates with clearing the adhesions and getting women pregnant through IVF. And so I think a little bit of hope comes back into play.
Yeah.
You think, okay, I'm working with the right people. Like maybe right. I'm going to be one of the ones that can overcome this. But as we were going through the process, we were doing, basically I would do a surgery with him and then 1 month. And then the following month I would go and do an IVF cycle because
wow.
They said that IVF was the most effective post one of these surgeries to remove the adhesions. So it was very important to act quickly. So I ended up kind of alternating between surgery, IVF cycle, surgery.
Oh my
IVF
God.
Cycle.
That's so much on your body. And so emotionally too, right? Like what was, sorry to interrupt, but what were you?
Yeah, no, that's okay.
Mentally, how were you doing with all of this?
So I'm very open about this part because I want women to not feel alone when it comes to this. I was suffering from depression. Mm-hmm. I was suffering from anxiety. There were many days where I wasn't able to leave the house. Mm-hmm. I wasn't able to work. And it was absolutely devastating. Like I was a shell of myself. Mm-hmm. And I want other women to know that that is actually normal because this is, it's huge mentally and physically. And, you know, the stress levels of dealing with infertility, as we know, they're comparable to dealing with cancer.
Yes.
And HIV, and they're as serious as those conditions in terms of effects on mental health. And so I think I definitely like to speak about the effect on my mental health because, you know, I went from a very bubbly, outgoing, vivacious person who loved life to somebody who would have an anxiety attack if I left the house.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that was it. Yeah, it changed everything for me.
Thank you so much for sharing that. I know that's not easy to come out and say that, but I can relate to a lot of that. I had really pretty bad depression when I was going through all this as well. And it was the same thing where I was like, why is no one talking about this? I had no idea that this would happen. And same as you, you know, normally I'm like pretty motivated and outgoing, and I was just feeling it really fucked with my head. Like I was just feeling so insecure and just started questioning everything. And just like, again, anxiety, like all that stuff. So I think it is important to normalize that and let people know that it is part of this sometimes, and B, that it does and can get better too. You know, like thankfully I'm not in that headspace anymore.
Yeah. And I think throughout the process, you know, when you're in a medical process, the doctors aren't going to sit there and say, how are you doing? Are you okay? You know, how are you mentally? Like, what's going on for you? They're worried about the medical aspects. And there's sort of no one there to tell you it's actually normal that you feel this bad because what you're going through, you know, is you're going through these cycles of grief and hope constantly. And I just think sometimes when you're in it, you don't have any context. Like everyone else just seems like they're living their life normally and you're just in this torturous cycle of grief and hope. And yeah, it's so normal to feel that way and to suffer.
Yeah. And also with the grief, I think it's important to say too that grief doesn't necessarily mean you had to have a pregnancy loss or a loss. It's also the grief of not like your life not turning out how you thought it was going to be. There's a grief there too. You know, when you find yourself in this world of infertility and getting these treatments and having the blinders on and, you know, and seeing people around you getting pregnant, like there's a grief of what you thought was going to happen in your life and having to let go of that reality, you know, now it's different.
Yeah. And I think as we're going through this, it's at a time where all of our friends are starting their families. Yep. And so it just compounds the grief because then you have everyone around you is moving forward with their life and you are just stuck.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, I was just stuck in this cycle of medical treatments and it was my full-time job because whilst also, you know, pursuing the surgeries and the IVF, of course, I'm doing everything, all of the holistic therapies, I'm doing acupuncture, I'm doing hypnotherapy, I'm doing like every single thing that you could add to the list, I did.
Same.
Because I thought, is this thing going to be the cure?
100%.
Is this going to be the cure? And every person that you would speak to would say, oh, like I have the thing that's going to fix this. I know the reason and I have the thing that's going to fix it. And so I was spending thousands and thousands of dollars on every alternative therapy and treatment alongside all of the, you know, traditional medicine. And so it was a full-time job for me. And
I feel like you're like reading my diary. Like that is exactly me too. I was like magic wish papers, a psychic, you know, going to Chinatown and buying these herbs that taste like actual shit and like choking them down. Like I was like, yes, all the things. Like I would do anything.
Yeah, I'll do anything.
Yeah.
I'll do anything.
Yeah.
And you know, you have people can, I had one person convinced me that I was harboring these like thoughts about motherhood and that were negative and that's why this was happening to me. And I was convinced that, okay, I've been harboring these things and creating blockages and
totally
it just wasn't true. I was actually dealing with a medical condition and that's the truth of it. And, you know, we don't tell people with other medical conditions that their thoughts created those conditions. But we do when it comes to fertility and, you know, my story kind of has even more twists and turns because after all of my surgeries, my doctor said, actually, I'm changing your diagnosis. And so that was like a whole nother thing. I'm like, wait, I thought I had Asherman's.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, actually, it's after my fifth surgery with him, he said, actually, I've realized this is not Asherman's. It's a very similar condition. It presents the same way, but you actually were born with a Mullerian duct anomaly, which is, it's a type of congenital defect of the uterus. And my specific uterus is called a T-shaped uterus.
Okay.
And that is part of the Mullerian duct anomaly family. So
wow.
The more common ones are, you might have a heart-shaped uterus. You may have two uteruses.
Mm-hmm.
Mine is a T-shape. And
okay.
As a result, it was, you know, an abnormal shape, and it also was full of fibrous tissue. And then I ended up changing IVF clinics, and this doctor, he sat me down and he said, Libby, you have tried everything available to us in medicine in Australia. You have left no stone unturned. You have done more than I even think you should have. Mm-hmm. He's like, the amount of surgeries that you have undergone, the IVF cycles, he just gave me that compassion and almost that permission to stop, because I think you always think that you haven't done enough. And there's always those hopeful stories where it's like, I gave up and then I did one more, you know, round of IVF and that worked. And you always think, maybe I'm just one more round away from success. And you also, you don't want to be seen as, you know, giving up. And mm-hmm. I think he really gave me permission to look at other avenues mm-hmm. because he was like, looking at your chances of success right now, they're so low, and this is causing you a lot of distress to keep going.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He's like, we need to look at where you're putting your effort and what the chances of success are. And he's like, I think your best chance of success is surrogacy. And he's like, you guys are fortunate. You can make high quality embryos.
Right.
Your uterus is just, it's not safe to carry a child.
So what did that feel like to hear that? You know, you said it was a bit of a relief. What were all the feelings that were rushing through your body? I'm sure it was all the emotions, right?
Yeah. So I'm someone, I'd been researching surrogacy alongside, I was parallel pathing because right. I'm very, I don't like to bury my head in the sand. I like to just take things head on.
Yep.
And I knew the day would come when a doctor would say that word, and I wanted to be ahead of it. I didn't mm-hmm. want them saying that word to me and me being in shock. And so I think when he said it, I was like, yep, I'm already onto it. Because, you know, as we all know, we're used to like plan A, B, C, D, you know, on this fertility journey. We're constantly like figuring out the next steps.
Absolutely.
And so I'd already been researching it. I'd already been speaking to other people. I was in all the Facebook groups.
What about your husband? Was he on the same page?
He's a lot more optimistic. And so I think he just kept feeling like eventually IVF will work for us.
Mm-hmm.
I think he just kept feeling like it's going to work. It's going to work. We don't need to think about that yet. He'd always sort of say, I don't think we're there yet. And mm-hmm. and I just, my intuition, I just knew it. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I just know IVF is not going to work for us. And I've just done too much research. And I just feel like, given my condition, I feel like we're going to end up, you know, going the surrogacy route.
Yeah.
But of course, in Australia, that's very difficult. It's not like it is in the States. And it's typically most surrogacies happen here between, you know, family members or friends.
Okay.
And so it's a very different landscape. And most Australians have to go overseas in order to build their families through surrogacy.
Okay. So were you looking at paths to do that and wait and people to work with and all that?
This episode is brought to you by My Life in a Book. Are you thinking about sending someone a truly special gift? Let me tell you about mylifeinabook.com. It's a unique service that turns your loved one's life stories into a beautiful book. Pretty cool, right? Here's how it works. Every week, mylifeinabook.com will send your loved one a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about their life or any custom questions you wish to ask. And then your loved one can either type their response or use their voice-to-text feature. MyLifeInABook.com compiles all of their responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And guess what? They can even create an audiobook using your loved one's voice recordings. It's like preserving their voice and stories for eternity. Imagine discovering stories about your loved one's youth, adventures, and the challenges they overcame. This book becomes a legacy, something you and future generations can cherish forever. Your loved one has given you a lifetime of stories, and this is your chance to give them a way to share them. So guys, I received my MyLifeInABook.com to try, and I decided to gift it to my mother-in-law for an upcoming Mother's Day gift. Don't tell her, and I hope she's not listening to this. But it's so easy to use, and they walk you through everything you need to do, and it creates a unique gift like no other. It's so cool and exciting to have something like this that we can cherish forever. So here's the best part. You can check out MyLifeInABook.com and use code INFERTILEAF at checkout for 15% off. If you want to create an unforgettable gift for your loved one, there's really no other way to go. Go to MyLifeInABook.com and use code INFERTILEAF for 15% off today. Thanks, MyLifeInABook. This episode is brought to you by Happy Mammoth. Are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes? If you're a woman, you're definitely not alone. There are more than 1,000 hormone disruptors living rent-free in our environment right now, in our food, our water, the air we breathe, the clothes we wear, our skincare, and they all mess with our hormones. The good news? We don't have to suffer through any of it anymore because now we have Hormone Harmony, a formula made only with herbal ingredients that are shown to reduce hormonal symptoms in women of all ages. Hormone Harmony is not just a hormone-supporting supplement. It's become a phenomenon. Women cannot stop talking about it on social media. In fact, a bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 seconds. And the biggest benefit? Feeling like myself again. That's what women mention over and over in their reviews. And there are more than 30,000 reviews for Hormone Harmony. Okay, guys, so here is the very exciting news. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code INFERTILEAF at checkout. Again, that's happymammoth.com and use the code INFERTILEAF for 15% off. Thanks, Happy Mammoth.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Yes. So, you know, started that whole research process again, more 3 a.m. Googling and phone calls and talking to parents and just, you know, it was a full-time job for me navigating. I was very privileged to be able to dedicate all my time to this, and my husband was just holding everything else down. And so I just led the charge, and we ended up pursuing surrogacy in Greece, and that turned out to be a huge mistake. That journey ended very traumatically. We were left vulnerable. Yeah, it was a very traumatic experience.
I'm so sorry that you had to go through that.
Yeah. And so when that happened, you know, we lost everything and we had to start again. Mm-hmm. And this time I knew if I was starting again, the only place I would do that was the US. Mm-hmm. It's the only place that I could trust. And so we flew straight to the US. I had to create all new embryos and start the whole surrogacy process from scratch again. And so at this point, you know, we're 4 years into our journey, and I had been going nonstop. Like, I had not had one break. I was just sprinting towards this. So 4 years, barely working, just sprinting towards this finish line that just kept moving. And
it's like there is no finish line, right? It just, the bar keeps getting moved and moved and moved, and it's exhausting. It's exhausting.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I moved as quickly as anyone could move. You know, I moved through my diagnoses and next steps as quickly, and it's still, we were at 4 years.
Right.
Like, I can't even imagine if, you know, we had been the type of people that weren't going to the next step quickly.
Right. Like, you know, if you weren't as decisive, it seems like you kind of make a decision and then you do it and then you follow through. And if it doesn't work, you pivot. And, you know, that's from what you've said, that seems like how it is. So to have any indecision or let's wait a few months, you know, it would have taken a lot longer probably.
Yeah. If we hadn't have moved as quickly as we had, it could have taken double the amount of time. But yeah, we kind of started again in the US, and thankfully we had an entirely different experience. We worked with the right people.
Okay.
And, you know, from the very beginning.
Yeah.
You know,
is this when New Gen came into play?
Yes, exactly. Okay. So New Gen Families were the agency that we decided to work with, and they just took such good care of us. You know, I told the founder, Damien, what had happened to us about my journey and the failed surrogacy journey. And he just was so compassionate.
Yeah.
And he just said, you know, we're going to take good care of you and make sure that nothing like that ever happens to you again.
Oh, that must have been such a relief to hear that and just feel like finally enveloped with, like, you know, love and compassion and care and like more hope.
Yes. And just empathy, like just it's sometimes there's a lack of empathy.
Yeah.
And, you know, throughout this journey. And I think just, I just finally felt like we were in the right place working with them. And, you know, after having so much loss and so many failed journeys and burning so much money and time, and I just wanted to move forward so desperately. And thankfully, I just worked with all the right people. You know, our clinic in LA, California Fertility Partners, were amazing. And Dr. Ringler created all of our new embryos, and we had amazing results through the clinic. And then I had New Gen Families as our surrogacy agency, who matched us with our amazing surrogate, and you know, very quickly. And so all of a sudden, I went from this will never work for me. All of a sudden, things just started to turn around really, really quickly.
Wow.
And they started to fall into place. And I think that was at the end of 2023 was the end of when things started to really turn around for us.
Okay.
And then, it was, I think the hard thing about surrogacy is, you know, you still carry all of your past traumas and experiences into surrogacy. You know, it doesn't just disappear. And so I had to, you know, New Gen were really good about connecting me with they've got like a mental health care partner.
That's
and
great.
So they connected me with their therapist, and she worked one-on-one with me. I mean, we had a joint session with our surrogate as well, but then she worked also one-on-one with me throughout the process. And
that's so
that
cool.
For me was invaluable, because I realized often you're racing towards the next step and you're doing all of the admin and all of the legwork, and you also need someone there to support you through the emotional side as well.
Yeah.
Because it can pop up at any time.
Right. You know, absolutely. Well, like you said before, for someone to just be like, Libby, how are you? How are you doing?
Yeah.
You know, check in with you. I think that's really important. So that's really amazing that they offered that. And, you know, that's really, really wonderful. I'm glad they had that for you.
For me, it was crucial, because I think you can think that you have processed the grief and that, okay, all right, we're in on the surrogacy journey now. And I've put all of that stuff behind me, and we're having success, and we've had a successful embryo transfer, and we're moving forward, but that grief can still pop up.
Absolutely.
You know, and I think it was very important for me to work with that therapist throughout, just to help give context to what I was feeling and what was going on, because no one in your life can, you know, you can't go to your girlfriends and be like, what was it like for you when your surrogate got a positive pregnancy test?
Or, I know. Like, it's, yeah,
you know, it's there's so good. There's to no talk- one to go to.
Right. It's so good to talk to people that have, that get it, who've been through it or similar paths. Absolutely. So tell me what happened once you got matched and all that.
Yeah. So the match call was like a first date, you know, we were laughing on the call and big smiles and just were very aligned on, you know, what we wanted from the journey. And that's what people sort of don't realize. You both have to pick each other. It's very much a mutual decision, mm-hmm. and it's teamwork, and you both have to want to do it with each other and be aligned on all of the big issues. Mm-hmm. And we were very aligned on everything, and we just felt such a good energy between all of us, and it just felt very right. And mm-hmm. so, you know, we were matched, and then, you know, you go through the legal process and the medical process, and I felt, compared to my prior experience with surrogacy, I just felt so supported.
Yeah.
Working with professionals who are the best in the business at this. And it's just, it was so organized, and mm-hmm. it was very good for a personality like me to be working with the team that I did, because it was just, yeah.
You have your shit together, I can tell. Yeah. And you need everyone around you to also be up to snuff and have their shit together too. Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. So it was, yeah, it was a really positive experience. But look, it was emotional too, you know.
Of course.
At the embryo transfer, I was there, you know, I was there holding a surrogate's hand, you know, through the transfer back at my IVF clinic. Mm-hmm. And that was an emotional day, because, you know, I'm normally the one who was in the gown.
Yeah.
And this, for the first time in, you know, 4.5 years, I wasn't in the gown.
Yes.
And that was a very emotional experience.
It's a really good way to put it. Yeah.
Yeah. I think up until that point, I had been the one in control and driving everything forward. I had been the one in the gown. I was the one making the doctor's appointments. I'm the one taking the medication. I'm figuring out next steps. I was very much at the center of the entire experience. Mm. And when you enter surrogacy, you are no longer at the center. You
so
are no
well
longer
put.
In control.
Yes, you almost have to relinquish the control.
You are no longer at the center of this experience. You're absolutely part of it, but you cannot center yourself. And that was a lot of work that I did with the therapist, was around, I need to manage my own emotional experience and not put that onto other people, and in particular our surrogate. It's not her responsibility to manage my emotional experience around this. That is wow. too much for her to bear, as well as, you know, what she's doing for us, which is already huge. And so my job was to manage myself throughout yes. the process. There were moments that I really yeah. struggled sure. because, yeah, that lack of control when it comes to something so important to you. Yeah. I mean, this is everything we had been through, and it's like this moment, and you have, you know, this pregnancy, and it's your baby, and you just want everything to be perfect for your baby.
Absolutely. And you can't control what they're eating or what they're doing or how they're sleeping and all that, right? I mean, there's a lot of trust there.
Yeah, it's a huge, but I think I had to do a lot of reframing in my mind and remind myself that there is no such thing as 100% safety in anything in life. Mm. And even if this baby was being carried by me, it actually would be in a far riskier position. Mm. And, right. you know, because it actually wasn't safe for me to carry
right. Yeah,
my baby. And so in essence, what I was doing was, you know, the ultimate act of a mother, which is to prioritize your child's safety over your own needs. And so that's how I framed it in my head, was, you know, I'm already being a mother to this child by choosing the safest environment for her.
Oh my God, you're going to make me cry. I just got the chills. Like that's, yeah. it's so true. Yeah.
And because, you know, and I just would remind myself, this is actually the safest environment for her
right
now. And you know, we've gone through this whole process to give her that best environment. And,
right.
and, you know, I am, yeah, I guess the ultimate, yeah, love, like motherly love. Sometimes it's putting your own desires or needs aside
Absolutely.
For that child. And I think for intended mothers, that just has to start a lot earlier in the process.
Interesting. You know? Interesting. And we should shout out surrogacy and surrogates in general too, is just the most selfless, you know, to anybody who steps up to do that. All the ones that I've talked to over the years have the common thread is genuinely wanting to help someone and genuinely sisterhood. And, you know, I talked to someone recently and she just said, it just broke my heart that not everybody can do this, and whatever I can do to help, you know, that's, it just, it's so wonderful.
Yeah. They're amazing human beings. Like, they deserve to be put on a pedestal.
Yeah.
Like, we, as a society, we should be looking up to yeah. those women, and really incredibly brave, incredibly yeah. selfless. And having gone through the journey now, I see the joy that they get out of this too. And I think that's something that a lot of people misunderstand. They think it's one-sided, and actually there's joy that both sides get from it. And, you know, it, there's a real sense of purpose in it. Like, I would do it if I could, but having seen
right.
what I've seen and the impact that you can have, you know, you change somebody's life and hundreds of other people's lives forever. You help create a legacy. You do something that is so huge. Like, I wish I could do it. I'm obviously right. not the right candidate, but
right.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. It brings them so much. Well, you know, I'm talking about, you know, our surrogate. Like,
yeah.
she just said it was the coolest thing ever.
Yeah. So tell me about meeting that baby.
Yeah. So we were, you know, we were all together for the birth. We were her support people. And it was just this beautiful, loving atmosphere. We were a team, you know. My husband's there counting her through contractions, and I'm helping the midwife. And we were just this, yeah, a real team effort. And, you know, the nurses and the midwives were in tears. They said, we've never seen anything so beautiful as this. And yeah, there was just, it was calm and loving. And it was even funny. Like, at moments we were all joking around with each other, and
right.
it was not at all what I expected.
Okay. In what way?
Because I think the movies sort of paint this picture of birth, you know, in only one way. And I
right.
think there's so many different experiences. And so I think it was just, yeah, this beautiful, unique experience that was ours.
Right.
And yeah.
It sounds like there was a lot of love in that room. A lot of
there
love.
Was.
Yeah.
And it was funny because, you know, our surrogate and I like spoke about it afterwards, and it felt so normal and natural that my baby should come out, and like, she was just mine instantly. She, as soon as she grabbed my finger, like, that was my baby, you know. Oh. That was, I just, the flood of love was like nothing I've ever felt before. I felt so connected to her instantly, and it felt so natural and normal that this should happen, which, you know, I didn't expect. I prepared myself for maybe I could feel the opposite, you know, it might take a little while. No, for me, it was instantaneous.
I would love to hear more specifically what it was like for you working with NewGen.
So I think in surrogacy, it can be so overwhelming because there's so many different parties involved in a surrogacy journey. And the thing that was so amazing about NewGen is they're sort of at the center of it as the agency, and they help you coordinate with all of the other parties, you know, whether that be your IVF clinic, your escrow, your attorney. There's so many moving parts. And, you know, with NewGen, I just always felt like, okay, I've got somebody who's got their eye on every part of the process. They care about me. I have a go-to at any moment who's going to help me navigate this. And I never felt alone. And I think that was a really nice thing for me, because I'd felt so alone for so many years navigating, you know, my IVF journey, my journey with infertility, that finally to have, you know, I had my journey manager and I would just pick up a phone call to her at any point and just say, what are we doing next? What happens? How do I respond to this? And I just had that steady guidance. And I think that was such a new experience for me.
Yeah, I think that's so important too. And you make me think of, you know, I had a wonderful doctor and it was so wonderful to be able to just email him at any time. Yeah. And he would personally email me back. Or if I was freaking out about something, I would call him and he would call me back, you know, when he wasn't doing procedures and things. And to feel like you said, like you've got somebody on your team, somebody who's rooting for you, somebody who has your best interest at heart and who wants this as badly as you do, makes such a difference. And I'm sure, as you know, that's not always the case, whether it be with a medical team or an agency or whatever. So I'm so glad that you found that with them. And, you know, it's unfortunately, I feel like it is the exception to the rule. You know, you would think that's industry standard, but a lot of people end up just feeling like a number or, you know, just kind of not getting that personal care. So when you can find it, like you did at NewGen, I think that makes such a difference.
Yeah. And I think that that's sort of the big advice that I always give to people is, you know, give to women going through this is just take note of how each person in the process makes you feel and make sure that they make you feel supported. And there is that good sort of patient or client ratio, you know, with the provider so that you are getting that level of service and care. Because at a very emotional time, you can't have somebody that comes back to you a week later. You know, the stakes are high. It's very emotional. Mm-hmm. And you need somebody who is really going to be there with you throughout each step. And so, yeah, it's just important to find those people.
Yeah. Can you think of any specific examples of times when you reached out because you were feeling overwhelmed and how, you know, the person on the other end helped you?
I think, yeah, I mean, my journey manager, Karen, it was in those early days, I was just so anxious on the journey because there were so many unknowns and I was constantly calling her and saying like, but what about if this happens? And I was trying to scenario plan for all of the different things that could happen. And she just would reassure me and say, you know, this is where we're at now. This is what will happen next. And just sort of helped me like look at what was in front of me and not try and go too far down each path. But, you know, in infertility, that's what we do. We scenario plan. We're like, okay, well, when this fails, then I do this. And then when this happens, and then I'm going to call this doctor. And when that surgery is not successful, you know, I will seek a second opinion. And we're always planning. And so I think it was hard for me to just, it was a new experience for me to kind of accept that, okay, we're on this path now, this surrogacy path, and I've got all these people helping me. We've got our incredible surrogate who is doing everything she can to make this work for us. Like, I've just got to go with this for a little while.
Yeah. I would love to, speaking of your amazing surrogate, I'd love to talk a little bit more about your relationship with her, both during and after, because I know that you guys have a beautiful friendship and like a bond that is no, like no other. So tell me a little bit more about that.
Yeah. So we, you know, we have a great relationship. We had a little text group throughout the journey with my husband, her and myself. And our text group is called the Dream Team.
Perfect.
You know, we would just text each other all, you know, every day. We'd be texting each other funny GIFs and, you know, and just jokes and videos of our lives. And that's kind of how we really, you know, we obviously had phone calls as well, but that text group really helped us feel connected as friends on a daily basis. And I think that's really important. Like, I wanted to know what her daughter was up to and she wanted to know what we were doing on our weekend. And because that's what friends do, you know, and that's really how we conducted the whole thing as friends who were in each other's lives and cared about each other. And we were also doing this huge thing, creating a life together. So
exactly.
You know, but we always tried to keep that friendship and that care as well.
Mm-hmm. So it's like resending like funny memes to each other and things like that.
Yeah. And she has a great sense of humor. And so she was always sending jokes. And then we had like mutual jokes between the three of us and like little like lines we'd quote from movies. And, you know, we kind of created our own little, yeah, this special little three-way bond. It's like we were all, in a relationship together.
For a throuple, if you will, right?
We were in a fully
modern family. Yes.
Yeah. Like, you know, you're kind of like, you've got these two women in your life this year, you know?
Totally. Exactly. And tell me about now, like, are you guys still talking all the time? And, you know, what are you looking forward to in the future, you know, like maintaining that relationship? And what will you tell, you know, your daughter, all those things?
Yeah. That's, you know, it's a big thing. And I know it's a big source of anxiety for a lot of intended mothers going into the process. Like, what will I say? What will I tell people? How will I tell my child? You know, how will my child feel? Those questions can be very anxiety inducing in the beginning. But once you go through the process, what I've found is it doesn't feel as heavy at the end as it did at the beginning, you know? And now the way that I explain it to people, you know, who, if it comes up in conversation or anything, I say, yeah, our beautiful friend, she carried her for us. Like, we're so blessed. And I mean that, you know, she is our friend. And just because we met through an agency doesn't mean that she's no less of our friend. And that's how I say it. And it feels really normal and natural to say that. And when I say it with sort of confidence and pride, the response is really good back. You know, people are like, cool, amazing. Like, what a special person. I'm like, absolutely.
I love that.
And that is how I will speak about it. And we're in the process of creating a book with all the photos of all of us. And, you know, we will read that book to her throughout her life so that she just always been a thing that she's known and understood. She has the photo, she has the book. We can always talk about it. You know, she can talk with our surrogate, you know, if she gets to that age and wants to ask questions or anything. So I think we have decided, you know, that we want it to be very natural, open and organic, and not ever be this scary thing that we need to sit down and talk about one day and it feels like a shock or
absolutely. I think that normalizing it, you know, from whatever age you feel comfortable with her is so important. And I see it as she's just lucky there's more love in her life and more amazing people in her life. Like, how lucky is she, you know, to have these amazing, this text group, the dream team behind her.
I hope know that there was so much love and dedication and teamwork and desire to bring her into the world, which, you know, not a lot of people can say that there was this much behind their coming into the world.
Absolutely. Yes.
And I have this much.
Right. And I have to share with you that one of my next children's books is going to be a surrogacy story. So again, normalizing it and, you know, telling the kids, like, you're so special that you came into the world this way. Like, you were so wanted.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think it's really important throughout this process to always put the child at the center of this. And what is, you know, as intended parents or as parents now, you have to put your feelings aside. And I know some parents feel, you know, anxious about the topic and they think, oh, maybe I don't want to bring this. Do I really need to tell my child, you know, can I just leave it? Is it necessary? But I think when we put the child at the center of it, it is important for them to understand their story in totality. And, you know, we've seen when a child does understand their story, it only benefits them and, you know, is the most, I think, responsible thing psychologically for them, in my opinion.
Okay, everybody, thanks so much for listening. Thanks again to Libby for being so honest and talking about all of it, especially the mental health piece and just the challenges that she went through from the ectopics to her surrogacy journey, the COVID. My God, her story just blew me away, but she's so amazing. And, you know, I love that, again, she's working for a place now that helped her build her family. So check out newgenfamilies.com. You can also find more on that in the show notes. But again, thank you so much to Libby. Thank you guys so much for listening. And I will talk to you next time.